SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Belmont Park, site of the 150th running of the Belmont Stakes, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Just looking out on the racetrack as the Harrow break ended about 15 minutes ago, and quite a few horses out, and just at the tail end there, I think I caught a Belmont horse, and couldn't really tell from the angle who it was. I know that Gronkowski was supposed to go to the gate and get a little gate schooling, the big galoot, and we'll talk to Mike Welch about midway point this morning and get some further thoughts from Mike as he continues to prepare the DRF Clocker report for all 3 days. Oh, looks like, how about that? There's some turf training going on today. How about that? I haven't seen anybody out on the grass the last week. Kind of nice. And it looked like a Cassie horse with the red saddle cloth. Well, of course, yesterday, before we start talking about what's gone on this morning and preparations that continue, including first day for a few horses that got work in, and Hofburg notably, tenfold and more. The draw yesterday, which took place at Citi Field, and I was compelled to send out a few tweets because it was pretty special. I grew up, as you may know, to a certain period on Long Island in Great Neck, and then to Connecticut. But my mother's parents, Julius and Ida, they were still in Great Neck, and my aunt in Roslyn, and so we were down all the time. And I grew up quasi Red Sox fan, and father's company had season tickets, so we were at Fenway often, about 90 minutes away, and about 2.5 hours to the island, and so plenty of Met games. My grandfather was a Met fan, so we spent a ton of time at Shea. I can't even guess how many games I might have seen as a kid at Shea Stadium, and then later, actually, when I worked around New York, would go to Shea much more often than to Yankee Stadium. And so first opportunity to visit Citi Field was fun in and of itself, let alone to have the Belmont draw there. And this turned out to be not just a good idea and a good draw, but it may have been the best draw that in my memory, certainly, for a Belmont. And the highlight, I mean, without a doubt, not just Baffert throwing out the first pitch later in the game and a lot of racetrackers hanging out in left field. The seats were from hell and gone. I mean, they were behind the left field foul pole. But and even that wasn't that. The panel discussion that was highlighted by, it's hard to say who highlighted it. I would say all four had moments in the sun. Dale Romans, Dwayne Lucas, Todd Pletcher, and Bob Baffert. And the four of them, with Andy Serling tossing out the missives, the softballs, and letting the remarkably accomplished quartet of horsemen answer. And if you haven't seen it, it's really worth watching. Sometimes these draws are just tedious. I don't know what other way to put it, but this was not. This was really entertaining, And there were a few zingers, Dale Romans taking shots at pretty much everybody in sight, starting with Andy, and they're good friends. And so he has license to beat up on the little guy. And Todd Pletcher, who, when Andy asked, you know, what happens when you after you win this race, and Todd Pletcher had the best answer, saying, well, Wayne would get up at, will get up at 3:30 and go to the barn. I'll get up at 4:30 and go to the barn. Bob Baffert will get up at 7:30 and go to the barn. And then came the shot at Dale, and 11:30 for Dale. And everybody that knows the schedule of that quartet, you can't argue much with the way in which Baffert scheduled everybody's arrival at the racetrack. It was very, very funny. And Wayne was terrific. Baffert is in, typical Baffert mode, although you can tell he's very focused on what lies ahead. And he's got a fairly set response for the somewhat predictable questions that come out. But from every measure, this was a really entertaining setting, number one, and then quick. Andy, Andy is very serious about keeping them, keeping the train on the tracks, and so from that standpoint, it went, very quickly. It really was well done, and a fun setting. And I understand Martin Panza, it was Martin's idea to go to Citi Field. And I don't know if you're going to do it every year, but it was original, and it was fun. And then Baffert, of course, goes out and throws the first pitch, and he had made it pretty clear that he was going to not throw from the mound, and that he was going to make sure not to bounce it. That's all he wanted to make sure, that he didn't bounce one to the catcher. And he kind of threw a bit of an ephus, as what I like a folly floater to the catcher, and very well received, and some nice round of publicity, of course, for Belmont Day in a in a cross marketed setting. Really fun. And as I tweeted, for those of you that are in the area, and if you're not coming to the track, maybe you only have tickets for for Friday, Saturday, but that swath of the Sports Center, basically, which is the tennis center, the National Tennis Center, where they play the U.S. Open, and now Citi Field, before that Shea, but there's the 1964 World's Fair grounds, and the Unisphere, of course, U.S. Steel's famed globe that is just iconic, and right across from the Unisphere, the Queen's Museum. And I gave a big push to the Queen's Museum yesterday, which is really fun. It's got one of the largest collections of Tiffany glass in the country, and it has the famed panorama of the city of New York, which is a scale model of the five boroughs. It is unbelievable. It's in a gigantic round room, and the city is laid out. It's, you walk around it on like a balcony. It is well worth seeing. The Queen's Museum, and then there's rotating art. They've also got fabulous collection of 1939 and 1964 memorabilia from the World's Fairs. I happen to collect World's Fair memorabilia from those two particularly, and the two New York World's Fairs. And as a kid growing up, I was 5 years old for the 1964 World's Fair. It's a small world, and everything that I've got only the vaguest recollection being a tot, but it's very special whenever I get a chance to go to the fairgrounds, and we always stop at the museum. And the museum, there's no charge. You just donate. There's a donation box, with a suggested but you don't. It's not like going to MoMA or the Guggenheim or any place where, you know, there's a set charge. Well worth it. And it's a bit offbeat. I don't think everybody knows that they can, that there's a museum there, and B, you know, take advantage of just walk the grounds and take a picture by the Unisphere. If you're of a certain age, you know exactly what I'm saying, because it was a big deal. A big deal the way the horses were put into the gate as the pills came out, and we lined up this field of 10, and it didn't take long. I think about the fourth pill was Justify, who draws the rail. And, you know, that elicited the usual oohs and ahs and the concerns and the questions, etc. But when it's all said and done, wasn't Mike Smith going to break fairly sharp and gain position anyway? We've seen Smith in this setting before, and whether you think about Airgate in the Travers, or you think about American Pharoah in the Preakness, what Smith will do, because certainly Free Drop Billy next to him is not going to break as sharply, even if Dale Romans wants him to be a little bit more in the race, Justify naturally fast and at least quick into stride, and you would think that Smith, in the room that he's got, as Mig yesterday laid out, 3/16 of a mile to the turn, you would have to think that you'll see Smith get Justify out and into stride, and then move him to about the 2.5 path. That is a standard Mike Smith procedure from inside, and then he'll judge, and if he has to try to control the pace from the front end, so be it. We've talked that so many of the 12 Triple Crowns have been won that way, basically 9 of the 12, and so it would not come as a surprise if that is their strategy, but it'll depend on what happens to the outside. Bravazo, probably the next horse to consider that's going to go forward. Restoring Hope as well. Gronkowski, a little bit of, it seems, based on, you know, what you see of him in his races. And then, of course, Noble Indy, who is taking blinkers off, and that it makes you wonder if he will be as aggressive, but you would think that almost everybody in the early going will want to at least be moving forward. I don't think you're going to see anybody per se take back like we see in particularly in Derby. But Mike Smith will do what Mike Smith does, and that is get out and get over and then decide from there. If there's horses that are hell-bent on the lead, so be it. And it wouldn't surprise me if Smith goes to the lead. It won't surprise me if there's a couple, a horse or two that are going to provide a target. If he doesn't let them clear and then, you know, maybe move either right behind or slightly to their outside and give himself every option from that point, entering the turn and the long run to the backstretch around the turn. So we're going to get some opinions on that. And in fact, right out of the box after our first break, when we're joined by Paul Matisse. And we didn't get a chance to talk to Paul before Preakness. And so we'll get his thoughts as we head into another Triple Crown attempt. Looking forward to checking in with Paul, and we'll see what else he is gleaned so far, and we will spend some time this morning getting kind of setting up shop in terms of tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday. Three just spectacular. I mean, there is no way to deny or critique anything when it comes to the way these three cards came together. Things get started nicely tomorrow. I mean, if you're focused on the stakes, you know, the Intercontinental and the Wonder Again on the graded front, with the Astoria for the two-year-old fillies starting the late pick four, and it's a nice sequence there. I'll tell you, I tried to, you know, do some of the top line handicapping on tomorrow and Friday's cards. Nick Tamaro and I will go through the card, the first two cards, at 11 o'clock, start of hour three. Nick will join me, and we'll hit, you know, most of the, well, certainly the stakes, and maybe a couple of other spots. I will tell you, the other spots are brutal. The allowances and the maiden races are absolutely eye-crossing. And you know what? The stakes, because we're so familiar in a lot of cases with the stake runners, they feel easier. Even with, you know, horses that are high-level performers, it feels like you're going to get a break these first 2 days in the stake races, where, you know, at least you can identify clear horses to beat. There are some of the allowances, like the 6.5 furlong second race. You've got an entry from Pletcher, but they're no more special than the rest of the field. It absolutely brutal. There was a couple of races where typically when I count more than three horses as contenders, I kind of just I don't skip, I don't, you know, just stop handicapping, but I wait until I come back and get a second pass at it before I make any decisions. And there's some races where there's literally five and six legitimate, logical win candidates. Brutal. So this is going to be a war. It's a 3-day fight. You know, regarding Saturday, if you haven't had a chance, here's the way the day unfolds. It starts with a state bred second level allowance going a mile on the grass. These are always fun. You know how much I love these in general. Then the easy goer, New York's easy goer, with eight, including Mask, getting back to something more appropriate. The Ogden Phipps, which came up okay despite the problems. Eight in there. The Acorn should be terrific. Monomoy Girl, the obvious horse to beat. The Brooklyn, nine in there. There were seven in the Acorn. The Jaipur, the very good 6-furlong turf sprint, which features Disco Partner and Pure Sensation for the Generazios. The Woody Stevens, field of 12. The Just a Game, eight in there. The Met, Tripolitan Handicap, the Manhattan, and the Belmont, and out of this world. Let's take a break here. Sunny, breezy day at beautiful Belmont Park. Still some concerns about the weather for Saturday, but we'll roll with that, and we will roll with Paul Matisse when we come back. At the Races, Belmont, dead ahead.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Porschebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I fell in love with your body and soul. My hands feel sticky and my head's eyes cold. My sugar tastes sour, my soul tastes sweet. I want to lay down, but I just can't sleep with your voodoo.
Round and round they go around the big mile-and-a-half oval, and just actually perfect timing. I was waiting for our filly to come out, Carlisle Bell. She's going to actually work on Friday in advance, hopefully, of running on the 13th, and she came out for a gallop. Paul Barone, nice enough to send her from usually she works at the training track, but Paul, nice enough, knowing that I was sitting here, sending her after the Harrow break, and she just came out, and so I got to see her start, and you know, then you could lose them on the other side, on the back stretch, then hopefully you pick them up as they gallop. No place quite like this oval, and the breadth of it, just remarkable. Speaking of horses that any of us are involved in, lucky enough to enjoy the game from that perspective, and we encourage everybody to. Paul Matisse joins us, and Matisse Racing Stable with a very celebrated win at Gulfstream the other day. Pay any price, Paul. Congratulations to you and Dookie and everybody.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. That was good to get kind of back on the right track.
When did, how did you, what's the backstory with that horse?
Oh, I'd like to take all the credit for him. But we were at Saratoga one day, and my brother and our friend Richie Averill, they were handicapping Gulfstream, and they saw that I had a huge figure on Pay Any Price. And when he ran for like 10,000 on the turf at Gulfstream, and he was running for 25, and they had decided they were going to claim the horse. Pretty much Richie had decided he was going to claim the horse and asked Duke and I if we wanted to go in with him. And so from the backyard of Saratoga, in between talking to about giving out picks to about six different people, I gave him the okay. and I claimed the horse. Was one like part of a horse who's won, I think it's eight or nine now, and one of the better 5 furlong turf horses.
Well, and that's a tremendous story, and it's one of those divisions that is so popular because it doesn't take a tremendous amount. It's easy on the horses. And, it's funny. You remember at Saratoga and in New York in general, when at the time, when P.J. Campo started to write turf sprints, the horse players were a little confounded. You know, it had been a division in the Mid-Atlantic, very prominently for years. And now it's really part of a steady diet. And I think players have begun to enjoy them that hadn't played them before. And horsemen love the turf sprint because your horse gets to run on a regular basis.
Yeah, I'm an expert at them. That's why I'm going to go to all 5 furlong turf races, 6 furlong turf races. our friends, Pete Fornital and Jonathan Kinchin own a piece of Long On Value, who just returned and just won. I think maybe we should have some kind of we got to build up this rubber match, maybe. Pay any price versus long on value somewhere. That would be great.
You should be throwing down in the match series. You should take advantage
of somewhere. We got to find somewhere we can go at it. We'll have like a wrestling build up. Pete would love that.
Absolutely. It'd be fun. Well,
to answer your question about the turf races, you know, they're funny. I found some things, handicapping them wise, that that when I do have an opinion in the five, in those races, I feel like I've gotten way better at them and I'm pretty good at them. But one of the problems I have with them is when I don't have an opinion, I'm not very good at, like, buying the race or getting through it or speculating on some 20-to-1 shot, like if I'm in a contest or if I'm playing pick fours, where I have to make a decision in those races. I need a little work on that. But when I have an opinion in those races, I got some ideas that it's more like angles, I guess. But in those are cases, I've gotten way better at it.
I'll make a corollary to that too, which is what I have found and what I've adopted into my own multi-race play when there's a turf sprint involved, that if you have a horse that really grabs you and stands out to you, you're better off singling it or going very narrow, like Morticia the other night in Pennsylvania, going narrow and taking a stand in those, because generally I have found if I look at a turf sprint and I don't have a horse that jumps out at me, then it's a jumble and there's a bunch that can win. But when I
no doubt
right yeah. when I see no one doubt. That stands out, press him or her.
Yeah, because I just don't, most of the time they're not races where you can buy them. You know, like a lot of times in these legs, it's just about getting through them sometimes.
Sure.
And, you know, you can take three or four. And sometimes even more than that, I mean, if you think you got it in a big field or something like that. I don't like going more than half without taking it all, maybe. But, I think you're 100% right. If the other way, you know, it's like one of those things where you're, why spread five or six deep when that doesn't do you any more good than...
Exactly.
Than having one or two, you know, it's and then you're really not betting a little to win a lot. You know what I mean? You're losing your edge. I agree 100% with what you're saying.
Well, I do see via Twitter that you had a barb for me. I will raise your barb by putting down an inquiry as to how excited you are about having the battler make his annual, you know, Saratoga reset and making his way north.
The battler's a ladies' man now. I we don't know where he is. He goes out every night with all the millennials. He's a hipster now. I don't know. I'm not even sure we're going to see him.
The hipster version of the battler who just celebrated a birthday. I forgot to send him out birthday wishes last week.
You're his friend on Twitter, right? Or on Facebook, right? So you guys are close.
Unlike Clocker John, I don't block him. I haven't muted him. Although I believe that John gave him parole in the last week or so.
What happened was, I think that Battler asked Clocker if he could stay with him for the Derby. That's when.
That's
now
it.
I think now they're back to. But I think that we should have taped that. That would have been a great horse racing reality show. Have those two guys. You could have Battler helping John Clock horses in the morning at Churchill. That would be one of the funniest things you've ever seen.
Oh, he'd be a big help, no doubt. Well, let's talk about the draw yesterday. And we didn't get a chance to talk before Preakness. And in fact, you really felt kind of ambivalent going into Preakness. What's your thinking coming out of Preakness in terms of the Triple Crown try and where we are during this Triple Crown season with clearly a major opportunity for this horse to complete the sweep.
Yeah, without a doubt, he's got a great chance to win. I actually hit the Preakness a little bit, but because on the trip on the Bravado had in the Derby, and then when it came back, there was a big speculation that maybe that he liked a wet track. So when the Preakness came up wet, you didn't have to go there. When it's all said and done, I'm not sure if any of that's true. And I'm not sure that the Preakness was a very good race, but it was run under such weird conditions that it's tough to say. I mean, you can make the argument, it's funny, is you can make the argument that Justify doesn't like a wet track. His figures are significantly lower, at least to me, on the wet track. I don't have the Derby or the Preakness being very fast, but it could be a result of circumstances. It's kind of a weird, way of sometimes happens in the racing where you don't get too excited to bet against, but you almost have to bet against them because of the perceived value in that he hasn't run fast in these longer races, and now he's got to run even longer. But I'm not sold that that's exactly right. And when you're getting put in those positions, it's tough to really just sink your teeth in, oh, I love this, type of mentality.
Right.
I think the Belmont is that way, although I would not have any fault with anybody who said, first of all, I don't have any fault with anybody who's rooting for him. I mean, that's what the Triple Crown's all about. So I'm not going to rain on anybody's parade there. For betting purposes, and if this is one of your few betting opportunities, and you're going to say I'm going to go against Justify, I'm not going to talk you out of it. I think you have every, that's not a bad way to go, But I'm not sold that this is the greatest bet against of all time. Though Justify does have a little bit of a Big Brown look to him, if you're a cycle reader and that sort of thing, he's probably trained better since the Preakness than Big Brown did, but he hasn't done a lot either. So, I'm kind of torn in that, I think the right thing is to bet against him, but I don't think it's like, all right, it's not like when I told everybody in the Travers, anybody who uses an exaggerator on a ticket, don't ever talk to me again. It's not that kind of, It's not like that kind of opinion. So, I understand the sentiment if you're going against them. And I probably will too, at least for at least a little bit.
Let's parse this, and I did this yesterday with Zoe Cadman and Rich Migliori, and I think it was a valuable exercise, which is the scenarios. And one of the things, in fact, we started this I think with Andy Serling and earlier in the Triple Crown season, saying look at your horse in these settings, and you don't need a Triple Crown race to do this, but what has to happen for your horse to succeed? So using that as the backdrop, what scenario, and especially with Justify drawing inside for the first time in this sequence, and not knowing what we're going to be dealing with surface-wise, with a potential for some wet weather, let's just neutralize that for now. What happens for Justify to win, and then we'll visit the scenario where he loses?
Well, the first thing is, that people, because we don't see this mile and a half race at Belmont, but once a year, once or twice a year, and you'll see it. It's a long run. You're probably sitting right in front of it. It's still a long run from the start to the first turn. They start at the wire, but it's not like they're running a mile at Finger Lakes. I mean, there's a long run to the first turn. And it's a tricky run to the first turn. So that could come into play, but not in the way most people would think it would. You know, if somebody gets way too aggressive or thinks that the position means something, you know, too quickly, I'm not sure that's going to play out in this race just because there's so little speed. And the two horses, you know, some of the comments that people have made, I think, you know, Chuck Simon and some others have made throughout the Triple Crown. This is a weird race because the two main speeds, Baffert trains one of them and Windstar owns part of the other one. So, I mean, it's hard to imagine that either one of those horses is going to, it certainly doesn't happen anymore anyway, but it's almost impossible to me that those two horses are going to go out and gut justify. And whatever happens, I think it's going to be well orchestrated, you know, and with maybe the exception of Gronkowski, I'm not sure anybody else can really get in the way of whatever they orchestrate early between those three horses. So my guess is that, to answer your question, is I don't think you're going to see where the pace does justify in. I think it's more of, you know, how good he is going long. You know, like, you know, it was a slow last half mile of the Derby. Anybody who watched the finish of the Preakness couldn't have been impressed with it. I know he galloped out all right and got in a bit, but, you know, there's definitely a question that that a mile and a half is not going to be his best distance, you know. And my guess would be that if he does lose, that would be what gets him, that he's probably not it won't be the pace or anything like that. I think it'll be his own physical.
Talk about the pace. Well, talk to the pace a little bit, because there's, you know, there's the flip side that I always try to stress to people when we talk about distances being lengthened for horses that, you know, that look good, you know, up to a certain distance. And the horse that is maybe apropos for this, that is an easy horse for people to understand and remember, is Catch a Glimpse. And everyone insisting that, or at least assuming that, when she got beyond a mile, oh, they'll catch her. And it was important to remember, as she kept kept lengthening her tries up to the Belmont Oaks, that the pace at a mile, and at a mile and a 16th, and even a mile and an eighth, it isn't going to be what a horse like that is going to have to met out on the front end going a mile and a quarter, or whatever distance you're talking about. And people should remember that there's not going to be a 46-second opening half. There's not going to be a 109 three quarters here. The first half of the race, it doesn't go like that in the Belmont. And the idea that, you know, this horse can just sort of gallop along. And this has always been a galloper's race. And it's why a horse like Commissioner, who looked woefully slow, and people so many times, Paul, after the Belmont, we say, how could that horse have won? He was too slow. He might have been too slow at a mile and a quarter and a mile and an eighth, but that's not the distance of this race.
Yeah, the two things that I would say that are a little bit different than what you said. I agree with most of what you say, but you know, it's a little bit different with dirt races, especially dirt races in New York,
yes,
where the tracks aren't very fast. So it's a little bit different than maybe saying a turf horse will stretch out further. I agree with you. It's just different. It's not that you're wrong. I just think it's a different, you know, it's a different kind of stretch out where, yeah, you have to lay out the 12 quarters, but you're going to have to really do it at Belmont, you know, I guess if they went 55 or something to the half, then it would be the same thing. But that, you know, that's why I think, you know, dirt racing is so much better in testing things, because, you know, you're going to go slower, but it's still going to be demanding, where sometimes maybe the turf horses, it's not as demanding. It's still about Okay, so in a mile and a quarter turf race, it's about 12 strides instead of 8, you know, or it's 14 strides versus 9, where in a mile and a half Belmont race, you know, you're going to have to really, you're going to have to run hard the whole way. I mean, you know, you're not going to go 20, you know, you're not going to go, like you say, 46-109, but, you know, it's like, it's more like, you know, it's still a good clip the whole way. You know, I mean, it's still demanding, I guess is the right word. And, you know, I'm not sure. I think some people are making a little bit mistake of thinking that Justify is American Pharoah, you know, who was maybe the king of clipping off 12s, you know. He's good. He's like that. But I think Justify's got more, you know, like speed. You know, that kind of brilliance, you know, ability, you know, like I'm still not 100% sold. He is, well, all horses are different, you know, and I think just because they both were trained by Baffert, they're both going for the Triple Crown. There's it's easy to do. There's a tendency to make maybe think that this is the same horse because he's trained similarly. And but I don't think they're the same horse. I think it's a little different. And he's going to have to do it a little bit differently than American Pharoah did it. And he's probably running against a little bit worse horses than American Pharoah did. I mean, Frosted wasn't a mile and a half horse, but this field is not great. I don't think we're not going to look back in this field and say, you know, or even like, you know, look at it like even like a Smarty Jones field where all these horses came back and were good when they were four. I'm doubting that. This is not the most stellar horses he's got to run. They're okay. They're nice, you know, but that's why I think his pure ability might get him there more than where than what we were, you know, than maybe the latter. Sure. And I think he's going to have to win it too. You know, I think that's going to have to play out that way. To go back to your question before it, I think that's how if he wins, that's what we'll say after, you know, that he was just better. And, you know, he's a better horse than the ones he ran against, you know, and we knew that going in and it wouldn't be a surprise, you know, like if that, you know, came about. So,
well, from the flip side, then, Paul,
all these races, every race is a different puzzle, you know, everyone's sure. A different feel. And if anybody's looking at it, make sure you're not looking at it like this is, you know, that he's American Pharoah and, you know, that he's, that it's going to be the same situation, same scenario, because it's going to play out differently.
Let's fold in the candidates to upset him and to return to what had been an extended run of Triple Crown tries that disappointed. Who are the prime win candidates beyond him?
Well, the obvious one is Hofburg. You know, he's got a real summer bird look to him, you know. And probably out of all the horses in the race, to go along with what I was saying before, you know, he might be the most, he might end up being the most accomplished horse, you know, after this race. I'm not sold he's good enough either. And, you know, everybody was kind of just saying, well, you know, he's going to be the value. I think he might be more of an underlay than Justify if people start looking at it like it's a match race between the two, it's not that I'm against Hofburg. I'm a little bit worried about, you know, like Summer Bird, if he was 12-1, you know, or whatever, he was something like that, wasn't he? Summer Bird. I'd say $29 or something, mm-hmm. Somewhere in that range. If he was going off like a nose odds, you know, then I would say to go after, but this isn't a firm than Alidar, you know what I mean? Like, you know, match up or anything, you know.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, easy goer at 2-1, you know, or something like that. So I'd be careful about him a little bit because of that. But I would say he's probably he's got the most upside, where if you came out of the race and said, well, he put it all together today, that wouldn't be shocking. You know, and you can make the argument that both the Pletcher horses have better forms than the horses he's won the Belmont with. You know, like So, I mean, I wouldn't. The thing that was a little bit interesting to me, just looking at the race, and it's intriguing, is that all the horses have worked pretty good going into the race. You know, it's like I was surprised. There was a lot of, you know, watching some of these workouts. I think for the most part, and maybe with the exception of some people didn't really like Blended Citizen's last workout. But besides that, you know, all the horses, including Gronkowski, who's worked really good. And I know my brother Duke, he's got some affiliation with the Phoenix Thoroughbreds, and, you know, they liked that horse a long time ago, and I know because of his name, he's not going to be much value to win, and probably with Chad training him, but I don't necessarily think that he's just going to go around there and trail either. So, you know, it's a really unique Belmont. It's kind of a fun race. You can go, you can look at it just like in racing, and what makes racing so great is, you know, you can, there's a lot of ways to look at this Belmont. You know, you can come at it a lot of different ways.
Let me, in fact, you saying that and suggesting that it's a different kind of a different scenario. I think it's different because it's the first Triple Crown try since it was proven that a horse could still win the Triple Crown. And
right.
So that makes it different. But for you, and this is maybe something that people, this is probably a fruitful exercise for some people, go back through your, you know, people so often are talking about their Derby winner, go back through everybody's individual Belmont experiences and think about the Belmont where you bet successfully. And I'm going to ask you, what have been your biggest Belmont hits? And maybe we can apply some of the components.
Yeah, look, there's some similarities. You know, I already mentioned Summerbird was a horse I liked. And I did pretty well on that one, I remember. Going way back, I go way back.
You can redboard all you want, Paul. You have a license to redboard.
You know, the thing about the Belmont, which has been interesting, you know, like, there's been times when I've been right on in the Belmont, and there's been times when, you haven't been close.
Yes.
You know,
yep.
Like,
yep.
And you say, how did that happen? You know, I have a funny story about the Belmont. And in 99, my first son was just born, so Duke was in Vegas, and I was home, and we were going over the Belmont. We were playing the pick six, and we were talking about the race, and I told him I liked Lemon Drop Kid, and for about, I would say, I'm not exaggerating, for about 10 minutes, my brother Duke told me why Lemon Drop Kid wasn't going to win. So we didn't get alive in the pick six. I think I hit some things, but I didn't use the horse who ran second, the Mott horse. And, you know, I bet him to win, and I did, but I thought it was like the most blown opportunity of all time. And about 5 minutes after the race goes over, I get a call from Duke, and he made this humongous score. Lemon Drop Kid. And I just started laughing at him. You know, like,
well, the triple.
He tried to talk me off him for 15 minutes, which got me, like, second guessing myself, you know. And then he makes more than I did on the race.
Well, the triple paid $5,000 that day. And the Mott horse
Vision and Verse. He had everything. He didn't. When I told him I like Drum and Drop Kid, he didn't say, you know, throw that Vision of Verse in. I think he's got a chance, you know. They could have done that. But that's what that's what big brothers are for.
Well, let's be fair. You've got a few of those that you could hold over his head.
Yeah, I'm probably. Yeah, for sure.
What did you like about Lemon Drop Kid? It's funny, we had Julie Crone yesterday, and we were talking, obviously, about the anniversary of Colonial Affair 25 years before. But he had lost the Peter Pan, LDK too, and Scotty pulled the same stunt and comes back and wins the Belmont.
You know, that year it was one of those things where sometimes you get into a good, you have a good line of how good the horses are, you know, like, and that year there, I really zeroed in, and I had a good line on the 3-year-olds that year. And I think that's one of my problems with this year is that, and it's also, because the horses don't run as much, but, you know, I like Charismatic in the Derby that year too. It was a really good, I had a good feel for the 3-year-olds in that year. And I remember Lemon Drop Kid, I think, being against it at Keeneland, and I don't remember exactly, but the way he trained into the race, and they skipped everything, right?
Yes.
Came in and pointed for the Belmont. And
same thing that he did. Thing he did with Colonial Affair.
You know, and he just was one of those horses that, you know, if you made a horse with what he's supposed to look like, I mean, Lemon Drop Kid was one of the most beautiful horses you've ever seen. So, but it just was one of those races where he was pointing for it, you know, type of thing. I remember feeling that way. I don't remember the complete details, but I know I had a good line. You know, the other year when Orb won, you know, like I had a good line on the 3-year-olds that year too. You know, Palace Malice was a Belmont that I did really good on. You know, he had come out of that real fast pace in the Derby,
right?
You know,
with the blinkers,
and then Oxbow, who wasn't as good as Palace Malice. You could really make that definitive argument in the Derby that Palace Malice was better than Oxbow, and Oxbow came back and won the Preakness. It was like one of those rare moments where you could, where it all kind of played out really, you know, perfect for you. You could see it. You could see what was coming. And I guess that's maybe my problem with this Belmont. This is more of a speculative, you know, I don't have that kind of feel of that year where, you know, after the Derby, you know who the best horses were, you know, like, you know, I came out of the Derby knowing that Gunrunner was a really good horse. The year, you know, he ran, it took him a little while to really, I mean, I never thought he was going to be as good as he was, you know, but I knew he was really good, you know, after that Derby. The, a horse like Flower Alley, who didn't do very good in the Derby, you know, you could watch the Derby and say, you know, that's a really nice horse, you know, even though he finished, I don't know, 10th or 11th, whatever he did, you know, and it kind of shaped your opinions of the 3-year-olds when they ran each other later. And I'd get really that feel this year yet by watching these two races. I don't think Bravazo and Tenfold are, you know, I mean, if you tell me the horse who wins the Preakness is going to beat Bravazo and Tenfold by a half a length, you know, I'm not going to say that's, you know, I guess he got a little bit where he got into a little bit of a duel, but it wasn't Palace Malice duel. I don't think Justify's Derby was Palace Malice like duels. I know I've heard that, you know, comparison a little bit, but it was different. You know, these races are different. You know, he went fast, but he didn't go crazy fast where he got, you know, too fast too soon. And that really made that Derby a really tough race to decipher. You know, Vino Rosso in the Derby, if somebody wanted to make the argument that he's the horse that maybe, it, you know, I'm not saying that me personally, but if you watched the Derby and came up with the conclusion that Vino Rosso is way better than what his result was, I'm not going to argue that. He didn't run bad in the Derby. You know, and I would say that if anybody liked Vino Rosso in the Derby, you got to bet him in this Belmont. I mean, if somebody landed that way beforehand and thinks that kind of way, I think you're in a better advantage than the rest of us, because you might have an insight into this race that we don't. because if you thought that going in, he's going to win the Belmont. You know, I mean, I didn't think that, and I'm not really getting that from the Derby. But I mean, you know, talk about Red Borden. If he went out and won and ran better, I certainly would say, oh, you know, I should have seen that coming. You know.
I completely agree. And in the ExpressBet wagering guide, I kind of made him the value key, picking him second and keying him second and third with, you know, the other four or five very logical horses, you know, the Hofburg, et cetera, that fit the bill.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's funny. Everybody salivates from March through the first Saturday in May to try to ridicule Todd Pletcher, and they don't spend any time noticing that he's building an unbelievable resume in this race. Since 2006, it's unbelievable what he's accomplished with the three wins and then another nine placings, including two photo losses that could have him winning five Belmonts in that period.
Yeah, that goes along with what I was saying, because I think, you know, just along those lines, that if you liked him, then he's better suited here, you know, and I don't think Rapoli's saying stuff that he doesn't believe. He wants to win the Belmont, you know, that's his heart. You know, he says he wants to win the Belmont more than the Derby. I believe him. He's not saying that just to be, you know, like if Lucas had said that, I wouldn't believe him. Whatever the next race is, it was the race he wanted to be win. But you know, but I believe it when Rapoli says that. So they're going with the, you know, they're going with everything they can here. The A game. I wish that Todd didn't abandon the Pletcher or the Pletcher. I wish he didn't abandon the Preakness. You know, just for racing's sake. You know, he's got enough 3-year-olds that if he wants to plan to win the Belmont, he could. Come up with a format where he's going to try to win the Preakness every year too, even if it's with a different horse.
That's true.
I think his lack of participation in the Preakness takes away from it a little bit, and I would hope that maybe, you know, I know that it's his business and he's got to you know, he has to, you know, do what's right for him, but you know, for the good racing, and he's got enough 3-year-olds. I made this joke after the Preakness. I said, the person that's probably the most disappointed after the Preakness was Todd Pletcher, because he's probably got 12 horses in his barn that if he'd run any of them, they all would have won. Just the way the race played out, you know. So I wish that he would take more of a active participation in the. I don't think it would lessen his Belmont results. Maybe he feels that way, and maybe that's why he doesn't. But. And I'm sure that the Belmont's very important to him too, but I just for the sake of racing, I would hope that he, at some point, decides that he wants to be more of an active participant in the Preakness.
Well, it does seem that his approach to both Derby, particularly to Derby, it keeps evolving. And I have said for years that certainly the earliest part, the first half of Pletcher's career, if you look through his Derby horses and look at their careers in total, you'll understand and appreciate that he got horses to the Derby and won races during the two-year-old campaigns and through the spring with horses that had no business going a mile and a quarter. And under many others' care, would never have even gotten to the Derby. And that is completely underappreciated, and it really is obscured that the kinds of horses he got the first portion of his career as a trainer were win-early types, were precocious
types. Well, you're sending me down memory lane. You did this earlier to me, so I'll give you – there's a horse that to this day still makes me upset that he trained at the biggest exacta box I think I've ever bet. And it was, I don't know, if it wasn't five figures, it was close. I'm going to guess it was more than that. But with Invisible Ink beat me in the Monarcos Congaree exacta.
Yep.
And to this day, I have no idea how he did, how that horse beat me in that, how he beat Country in that race. But, you know, so, you know, there's one horse there that early on that way outran his ability, you know, in the Derby. So,
well, if we're gonna do this, then I'm gonna throw in my $64,000 mistake. Myself and Barbecue Bill and my friend Phil Melnick, we each were putting up $40 in that Derby. And for me and Phil, it was our first Derby. And I was working the barbecue. And we decided we'd do a 5-horse superfecta box. And, of course, you're going to start with Point Given. Monarcos demanded respect. Congaree absolutely was going to be on all of our tickets. I had grown affection for Joe O's Thunder Blitz. And it came down to a choice of two Thunder Gulch Sons, Jamaican Rum and Invisible Ink. And I picked Jamaican Rum. And it was my responsibility to put the ticket together, and I used Jamaican Rum.
And what is Paul, that super pay?
The pay is
$64,000. Oh, it's 64, yeah.
And here's the rub is, I basically picked the top six finishers in that Derby, 17 horses, and came away with nothing.
It's a tough game. It's a brutal game sometimes, huh? You learned early.
Yeah.
But that's what that one makes you so great, Steve. You fought right through it. And now you... now you're hanging around with Sheikh Mohammed and celebrating at some derbies and, you know...
You're unbelievable. Before we go, an unbelievable visit with Paul Matisse here, and people are still digesting the $10,000 Exacta box. they're wrapping their mind around that, Paul.
It was 8 maybe. I don't know. It was up there.
What's 8? 10? The rest of the card. And tomorrow and Friday, anything that is sort of jumped at you that in first glances that you're looking forward to and anything
you
that...
know, I didn't get to look at Fridays because there was some kind of glitch where I get my past performances, but I did look at Saturdays last night. I was taken by not maybe how you know, that these races were by the high quality of, you know, like this is the greatest Met Mile ever, this is the greatest Manhattan ever, but they're definitely very competitive, you know? I mean, it's, right through the card, I mean, you couldn't get more of, you know, competitive races, that's for sure. I mean, that's, you know, I kind of like the possibilities in the Woody Stevens, you know, a 7-furlong dirt race is a race that, especially at Belmont, is you have to really be careful of bias. You know, I think, you know, I mean, I'm a huge proponent of bias, but sometimes people take it a little bit too far in some of these races, you know, of where you want to go and how you want to approach them. But 7-furlong race at Belmont, the bias is going to come into play. So, you know, it's hard to really go, you know, what you're after. But there's some interesting scenarios that are going to play out in that race where, you know, with the cutbacks from the Florida Derby horses are in there. And I'm shocked by the morning line on World of Trouble. You know, like, you know, those guys are usually right on the morning line, Eric and David, who do it, but I'm not sure he's going to be 7-2, and I really liked him on the cutback and the layoff with the service, and I could see if that race is an outside, kind of like an outside speed track, which a lot of times on Belmont Day it can go that way, you know, and a horse like Kinsaka is another horse I kind of like, but you know. He's got him as 3-1, so
I know.
I got to digest that race more, but I think that's a really interesting race, you know, and You know, you got those horses coming out of the Pat Day Mile, that ridiculous race that didn't mean anything.
Yeah.
As well. So it's a really interesting race. It, you know, and then even the horse from Maryland who ran second to Matoli, he looks like a 7-furlong horse to me. And he might get lost in the whole thing. It's a really interesting race, but it's a tough one to tout like right now. So, I apologize to everybody for not really, you know, how I'm going to go. But it's a great race. Great race to handicap. Great puzzle.
Now, there's a lot of horses that are dirtied up in this field, including Madison's Luna for Phil Bauer, Mr. Rigney, and like you say. The Pat Day, for those of you that are handicapping, and when you come to Pat Day Mile, you can pretty much put a line, not to take away from Funny Duck, put a line through it.
Right.
It means absolutely nothing.
Don't take against, just don't even consider it. It just doesn't mean anything.
No. Well, it means something every time we get a chance to talk to a Matisse, whether it's Chick, Paul, Duke. Soon we'll be turning our attention to the offspring, to Carson and the rest of the rest of the progeny. As always, Paul, best of luck, and we'll be digesting this next week.
Yeah, good luck down there this weekend.
Everybody, Paul Matisse, and you follow Paul on Twitter. We haven't even had a chance to talk about Paul's role in some of the new initiatives that are going on around the game. And, of course, he's been heavily involved in, you know, some of the new steering organization that has come out of the contest world. And I also want to get some sports betting opinions from him as well. Steve Criss, too, actually, put the arm out for Steve, who we just haven't just aren't hearing from as often as we'd like. He's, you know, he's playing. And in fact, he's purchased, I think, a couple of horses that he's going to campaign. And hope we get a chance to talk to Steve Criss before Friday. We will talk to Andy Beyer, certainly. I told you Nick Tamaro at the top of hour three. But right now we'll take the break. Hour two, Sid Fernando. And we spent part of that conversation with Paul Matisse talking about the distance and the suitability for certain horses, and you know who is long-winded, whether it's by their, you know, by their pedigree per se, whether it's you know, their makeup, whether their physical properties, and you know how they travel, and energy expense, etc. All goes into, you know, this unique assignment, one circuit of a mile and a half. And I think a lot of us agree that, you know, that does play into the hands of the favorite. But there's others here that are going to be, you know, getting that gallop opportunity. Certainly Blended Citizens' name has come up in this arena. Team Winchell feels the tenfold benefits here as well. Gronkowski, big horse that, as Zoe Cadman said yesterday, you know, stands over a lot of ground. Let's see what Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, can impart on this topic with Sid Fernando. Joins us next. We're live at Belmont. It's a beautiful, perfect day, and gosh, I wish we could maintain this through Saturday. Back after a break.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
This is Steve Cole from the Cole Ranch, a horse farm and training center located in California. We offer folks the chance to join hands with us to own a young racehorse from our farm. We're dramatically different compared to most popular racing partnerships because we don't charge fees or commissions, and we don't inflate the value of the horse. Most racing partnerships buy a horse at auction for, say, $100,000, then turn around and sell shares for $200,000. We value our horses realistically and don't add on fees or commissions. Right now, Cole Ranch is selling shares in a 2-year-old Calbred colt named Mr. Wickham. He's by Heatseeker out of Serena's Echo, our stakes-producing mare, who is a full sister to multimillionaire Thor's Echo. You can get into this horse for as little as $1,000, which will entitle you to a 5% interest. If you want to invest in this horse, please call me at area code 805-990-3669 or visit us on the web at thecoleranch.com.